Mr. Benjamin, your mic's off. Thank you.
Board meeting will come to order. First item on our agenda is the public comment period. Our first commenter is Jack Corbett. Jack, if you would come forward. And the second commenter will be Michael Ball. Michael, if you would get ready. Go ahead, Jack. You got 2 minutes, and there's a little counter there. Can he see it, too? Yeah, okay.
And there's a trap door under my feet as well, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
And I got the button.
I have a prepared testimony which has been distributed to members of the board, and I'll summarize it briefly. MetroRiders.org is a volunteer group of riders. I am one of their directors, and I reside in Montgomery County, Maryland. There are two issues in our paper, one having to do with transparency between this board and the contributing jurisdictions on the operating budget, but I will forego that and leave that to your reading and focus on page 2, which has to do with our concerns about the capital budget you're now considering. You have not asked for public comment at all on the public policy issues included in this 6-year capital financing program. You just took comments on the operating budget. I fear that this is a mistake. How many riders know that there's no money in the 6-year budget for purchasing any additional, just replacement rail cars, so they're standing cheek to jowl and waiting for the next train that may not have space is going to be a problem that increases markedly over the next decade? Do riders realize that the $300 million of new capital being annually provided, half by the feds and half by the jurisdictions, is really displacing some of the existing levels of local funding? Congress intended this as new money, not displacement money. If asked, would riders want to press the contributing jurisdictions to go beyond the state of good repair capital budget and somehow to arrange financing for new rail and bus capacity in the next few years? Attached to our statement, Mr. Chairman, is a change in the capital budget over the last 2 months. The jurisdictions have reduced their offering by $139 million just in the last 2 months. We don't think that's a good solution, and we urge you to look at it again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack. Michael Ball.
Kind of sucks I have 2 minutes because this may take a little longer than that. I want you all to look back to a deadly accident on the Red Line when one train rear-ended another one and the front car of the moving train telescoped like an accordion. Most components of the 75-foot long rail car collapsed into an area about a third that size. I'm not talking about the 2009 Fort Totten crash. I'm talking about one by the Shady Grove Metro Station back in 1996. And it wasn't a 1,000 series car that was affected. It was a 3,000 series car. But yet the 2,000, 3,000, and 4,000 series cars are all built by the same manufacturer and have the same fundamental body and frame structures. They're probably all equally vulnerable to heavy telescoping in a crash, yet only the 1,000 series are barred from the ends of cars. The NTSB released a report in 2004 stating that of the current cars, only the 5,000 and the 6,000 series cars are structurally rigid enough to handle a crash properly. Now, I have a bunch of math here, but what I'll say is this. Even if every train were 8 cars long, there are more trains that would run through the system than there are available if you had 5,000 and 6,000 series cars on the ends of each train. And that doesn't even include gap trains that basically don't provide service unless an active train goes out of service because of a breakdown. So Also, another Rumata study determined that the 4000 series, even during midlife rehabilitation, couldn't be upgraded to be more structurally rigid. So they'll have to be placed in the middle of 7000 series trains even after rehabilitation, and that should be reflected in the design of the rehabbed cars. I basically have a bunch of other stuff here about how trains should be structured, and basically I'll provide that to you guys. Thanks.
Is swearing in the new chief safety officer on the agenda? I don't believe
he is here. Yes.
Manager is not going to give his report, but I believe we need to swear in the new chief safety officer. So if we can substitute swearing in the chief safety officer for the general manager's report, are there any other changes to the agenda? If not, the agenda is approved with those changes. The minutes of the March 25th, 2010 board meeting are before us. Are there any additions, corrections, or modifications to that, to those minutes? If not, the minutes are approved as presented. We now have the report by the Riders Advisory Council, Mr. DiBernardo.
Good afternoon, Chairman Benjamin and members of the board. It's my pleasure to present you with the Riders Advisory Council report for April 2010. The council has been busy the past 2 months preparing a response to the FY 2011 budget, which we have transmitted to you with our recommendations. I only want to highlight a few of the items in that budget today, and to see if you have any questions concerning them. But first, I'd like to say that we appreciate learning today of Interim General Manager Saul's newly revised budget because of it. It proposes drastic reductions in the need for service cuts. Although our response to the budget proposal was obviously made well before Mr. Saul's made these revisions, we still feel that our recommendations can prove helpful in your decision-making concerning fare increases and any remaining service cuts. The highlights that I would like to mention from our letter are the following. Number one, the council strongly supports additional jurisdictional subsidies to help Metro close its anticipated operating budget gap. Number two, Metro should ensure that it has fully identified and put into place internal cost-saving measures before increasing fares or decreasing service. As the public has stated time and again in the public hearings and surveys, if fare increases or service cuts are necessary to help the authority close the budget gap, the council would prefer that service cuts represent a very small percentage in comparison to fare increases. We believe that number four, strategies that reduce service, such as lengthening headways or closing one of two station mezzanines, are preferable to strategies that eliminate service, such as reducing service hours or cutting entire bus lines. Finally, certain proposals, such as the elimination of bus stops on certain bus lines or the elimination of service on specific bus lines, should be reviewed in a more in-depth, case-by-case basis prior to any actions being taken. I'd be happy to answer any questions or comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
I have questions.
Yeah. Stay there for a second, Frank, please. I first of all, wanted to compliment the Riders Advisory Council on doing a very difficult job It's very easy to come in and say, don't raise fares, don't cut service, and make sure the jurisdictions pay it all. But what you did was try and set a series of priorities and say, if you have to, look at this first, look at this second, look at this third, and these are the ways that we as riders and representatives of riders think you ought to be looking at the potential ways to close the budget. That's a very large challenge, and getting a group of people to agree to that is extremely difficult. I'm very pleased that you took that on and that you did the job that you did. So on behalf of the board, we really appreciate those efforts by the Riders Advisory Council. Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chairman, I join you in congratulating and thanking the members of the Riders Advisory Council for what is a very responsible and useful bit of advice. We, of course, you know, may or may not accept any or part of it, but the point is this is something that is a responsible approach that, you know, is intellectually honest and actually useful for the discussion. It directly addresses the challenge. It establishes priorities. I certainly sympathize with your overall point, and as you know, it's no surprise I support your major priority, which is we need some additional jurisdictional subsidies so we can mitigate the impact to which riders will have to pay for the problems we have right now. But this is very helpful, so please pass on my thanks as well. I would like to know, you referred to the new proposal from the general manager. Mm-hmm. I presume the Riders Council formally has not received that or had the opportunity to evaluate it.
No.
So given that we're going to have a meeting another week with the Finance Committee will to look at it, one of the things I think would be useful, Mr. Chairman, is to have the specific priorities over fares and service that are outlined here stacked against where the proposal from staff now stands so we can see just across it how does what is being proposed compare with these, where it's the same, where it's different, whatever it is, so that we can easily look at what the difference, any differences there are in those proposals. And I think that would be useful to have when the committee comes back next week.
For a second, let's just see if they can in fact do that. Okay. Is that something you could do for us?
Yes, we can.
Thank you.
Now this is a focus on essentially the operating budget. I take it from this that you haven't had the opportunity yet to have discussions over the CIP in this kind of detail.
No.
And of course you wouldn't necessarily have seen what we saw this morning.
Right.
So let me say that I'd be very interested in seeing the work that will come out of your discussion, as I'm sure you're going to have, over that CIP and what we saw this morning and what the analysis is that the Riders Council may come to as you look at it. We did have comment this morning from Mr. Corbett on this very subject, and his points here, I think, were in parallel to the point I made earlier this morning in the committee meeting, and I do think that is something that needs to be focused on, the fact that it would appear that the capital budget as being proposed in fact reduces the capital commitment of the region and perhaps shows no increase at all resulting from what is supposed to be new funding, federal and state. But at any rate, I look forward to hearing Riders Council's comments on that question and those issues as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. If there are no other questions, thank you very much, Mr. DiBernardo. Our next item is what's left of the report by the general manager. And Ms. Hewlett reminded me, it seems very odd. It seems like Mr. Sarles has done so much work now that he's been with us forever. But I believe this is your first formal board meeting.
Yes, it is.
And we welcome you to our first formal board meeting. It seems like you've been here for a long time doing a lot of stuff. That's what it's like being the general manager of Metro. Our first action here is to swear in Mr. Doherty, and he is here.
Thank you.
Our next item is the employee spotlight.
I'd like to ask Mr. Hicks to come forward. Okay. Mr. Benjamin, Mr. Sarles. Okay. Mr. Hicks, thanks for staying awake. He works at night, so we'll try to get you out here as soon as possible. Today, the employee spotlight, we'd like to recognize an outstanding rail employee, Mr. Eric Hicks, supervisor of track and weight. On March 2nd, Mr. Hicks was assigned to perform a maintenance in an area between Tentleytown and Friendship Heights Metro rail stations. He was doing an inspection ahead of his work crew when he identified a horizontal crack in the rail. He ensured the crew addressed the potentially serious condition immediately. Identifying this crack certainly averted a potentially serious condition. Mr. Hicks demonstrated his commitment to safety with a careful inspection of his work area and taking the actions necessary to ensure it was remedied. Please join me in recognizing Supervisor Eric Hicks.
Our next item is the report by the Finance and Administration Committee. Ms. Hutchins.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Finance and Administration met on April 8th, and at that meeting, following action occurred. We accepted the staff report for the public hearings on the FY 2011 budget, and as you've noted, the staff report noted the six public hearings that were held throughout the region, and on March 4th, and April 6th to solicit comment. They received 5,475 inputs on a public comment from the hearings, as well as received 1,286 letters to the jurisdictions and to the 363 completed online questionnaires. And that item was approved and accepted. Also, a part of the April 8th meeting, we amended the budget for the two DC reimbursable projects. The approval reallocates funds to the District of Columbia Anacostia Light Rail Project, from the DC Convention Center Project, and the Navy Yard Project. The approval reallocates staff funding from the Navy Yard Project's Transit Infrastructure Investment Fund account to the Anacostia Light Rail Project TIF account. And at the request of Mr. Graham, all funds to be reallocated to the District of Columbia's TIF funds. And that was approved. Mr. Chairman, I move approval of that item and the item before. Oh, and there's one more. I'm sorry. I'll make the yes.
Mr. Graham.
It's on.
It's on.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Just to clarify that while I had made the request that was described by Mrs. Hudson, I have agreed to a further disposition of the actual resolution before us, and that these monies will be committed to an uncommitted DC fund within our treasury.
Ms. Hudgens, may I?
And that's what the resolution provides.
I note that this then would be, I believe, the first time that we're taking TIF funds and moving them to an uncommitted category. I thought TIF funds were always constrained. Is that consistent with board policy? I believe it's not then.
Well, let me defer. I don't want to. I think Ms. O'Keefe has an opinion.
I believe we always have TIF constrained to capital projects, whereas an unallocated would not be.
May I suggest that you call on Carol O'Keefe?
Certainly. Ms. O'Keefe?
Is this on? Okay, thanks. Well, there are two different constraints on TIF funds. FTA considers them program income, and they can be used for any operating or capital purpose. The board has a policy that designates them primarily for capital purposes. This account for uncommitted funds, there are about, I think, 447,000, give or take, amounts that were originally TIF funds. and the young committed funds, also received funds that were primarily capital funds. They came from two reimbursable projects that were the result of direct appropriations from the federal government. The long and the short of it is that I would assume and thought that the funds were going to be ultimately used for additional capital purposes, but that's really something that the board could determine to the contrary, because the TIF funds can be used for either, subject to the board's determination.
If we were to just place within this the constraint to be used for capital purposes, would that solve the problem?
Well,
we would restrict our discretion. Why would we want to restrict our discretion in that fashion?
Well, the finding which I am hearing the general counsel make is that normally as TIF it would be used for capital.
That's not what I heard.
Okay.
That's not what I heard. I heard the general counsel's, may I, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
I heard the general counsel say that TIF funds would be available for either capital or operating.
Under FTA guidelines, right. Under the board's resolution, they are primarily targeted to transit-oriented / capital funds.
Primarily.
Primarily.
Right. So,
but not exclusively.
Right. So I read that as giving discretion to the board. Am I right or am I wrong?
The original would have put all, well, Mr. Graham's motion would have put them all in TIF, and I believe that was an incorrect location, because TIF funds, the TIF fund is populated by very specific funds from primarily joint development proceeds. So from a purist perspective, you could put the TIF funds back in the TIF and the residual in the uncommitted funds. I don't think it really makes a lot of practical difference.
But the bottom, but if I may reclaim my time, Mr. Chairman, but the bottom line is that this motion that is before us today is proper. Is the answer to that yes or no?
Yes.
Thank you.
So you're saying it is legal, but it is a precedent for us. I don't think we've ever moved TIF funds to an unconstrained category.
That's correct.
Okay. With the understanding that this is a precedent that I don't particularly like and hope we will not repeat, I would be willing to support this instance.
It's been moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask that. I think it's on. I'm going to ask that the board get some. I guess this will be captured from the item here, but I think we should pull out that section that has allocated, has described the use of the TIF funds, so that we're prepared. When we went through the committee, this was not the direction we were going, and so I think having our decision to move forward, Ms. O'Keefe has given her opinion that it's appropriate, but I guess I'd like to see the description of the TIF fund allocation, so that we can be better prepared, so that at least I would be.
Okay.
And that's, I would ask for information. Okay.
You want to continue?
Yes. The next item is the Crystal City Potomac Yard Transit.
Point of order. Yeah. That vote was approved.
Thank you.
This change was approved under the condition that it's not setting a precedent.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I think the vote proceeded prior to that.
No, and the vote followed my statement.
Well, it followed your statement, okay. But there was no amendment to the motion.
No, there was no amendment
and
to the motion.
And so we can't incorporate an amendment just as
I
we see fit. You know, the motion was presented. The motion was passed.
I agree with that.
And the motion was to approve.
I've agreed with you, Mr.
Okay.
Graham.
Well, good. Thank you very much.
And moving forward. Crystal City Potomac Yard Transit Way Reimbursable Project for the City of Alexandria is brought to the committee and moved for approval to establish a reimbursable project for update of the environmental document for Crystal City Potomac Yard Transit Way, establish a budget of $300,000 for the project, increase the FY 2010 reimbursable projects budget by $300,000, authorize staff to negotiate
and the general manager to execute a reimbursable agreement with the City of Alexandria and issue tasks to the Metro Planning Consultant for technical support, and that is a move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any comment? And we're ready for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. There are no noes. This one passes.
And the last action item is at the board's 2010 capital budget reprogramming of the $29 million within the FY 2010 Metro Matters program, and the amended capital budget to include an additional $512,000 in funding received from the federal security grant that requires no matching of $60,000, and from the $500,000 Sears rail car insurance settlement of $425,000. Was moved for approval. Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
And is there a second of this one?
Second.
Moved and seconded. I would just note that the reason that we are able to do the reprogramming is that all of the funds being reprogrammed are within the IRP. All in favor of this item, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. There are no noes.
And, Mr. Chairman, the remaining meeting of April 8th, Finance and Administration Committee involved the discussion of the FY 2011 budget and the finance report for February 2010. Not included in this report today was the special meeting of the finance that presented an updated FY 2011 budget as proposed through staff and the general manager, and that was an information item. And the last item was the capital budget that for Metro financing, and that item was recommended to move to the jurisdictions.
I believe I received a note from the secretary questioning whether there was an official vote on the staff report acceptance.
Yes.
I believe the original motion was for both items A and B.
That was
seconded and voted on, so that constituted a vote on both.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify. So the vote on the acceptance was part of the vote on the
approval, because that's how it was moved by Ms. Hudgens.
The approval of B, which was a specific
approval of
project.
B, right. She moved both together.
But not C.
She did not move C. That was moved separately, and D was moved separately.
I must admit, I was also confused.
Okay. Report by the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee, Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chairman, on April 8th, the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee met, spent a substantial time, as members will recall, reviewing the status of various findings and recommendations by safety oversight agencies. The staff made a presentation, but we also had specifically the chair and members of the Tri-State Oversight Committee present to engage directly with us and told us about the status of things from their perspective. The result of the extensive discussion we had that day was proposed guidance that comes forward to you in the form of a resolution that was presented to the committee by Mr. Giancola that would direct the staff to specifically track and report on the status of the variety of different agencies and outside bodies that include the Tri-State Oversight Committee, the National Transportation Safety Board, the Federal Transit Administration, and any others there may be. And this resolution provides a specific direction to the general manager and his staff on the one hand, and also to the inspector general and her staff on the other, that would result in the creation of a mechanism for tracking simultaneously in parallel, concurrently, if you will, all the various findings and recommendations from any of these agencies, including internal findings and recommendations, so that they can be observed over time, so that it can easily be seen all together in one place, and so that the board and anyone else can determine how the agency is doing and making progress towards satisfying all those. The general manager is directed to develop such a mechanism and to regularly provide, at least on a quarterly basis, to the reports to the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee. And simultaneously, the inspector general will be tracking these, and it was discussed that this will be a common framework within which the inspector general will work following the development of this mechanism by the general manager, so that, again, we'll be able to see the agency's assessment of its progress, the inspector general's response to that, and, of course, anyone looking from the outside can see that and, if necessary, point any discrepancies that they perceive. Again, this is contained in the resolution that is before you. The committee does recommend your approval, and on behalf of the committee, I move approval of the resolution.
It has been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Hudgens, second. Are there any comments, questions? Mr. Linton.
See, you know, I would like for the board to ask the various agencies to come up with an MOU so they have a common expectation on what the requirements are that Metro needs to satisfy. And maybe they can all get in a room and agree as to what a safety plan should be. And then we're responding to one plan with one sets of requirements rather than responding to multitude of which we're asked to do at this point. It would be make it easier for our staff, which is dwindling in numbers, and it would be the more appropriate way to go. But I guess we'll do like government normally does, which is responding to what you've proposed in our resolution.
I would note, Mr. Linton, that probably transit agencies across the country would agree with your suggestion, since they are all faced with the same issue. Are there any other comments? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. This passes. There are no more items for customer service.
Report, Mr. Chairman.
No more items for customer service. Mr. Albert, the Policy, Program Development, and Intergovernmental Relations Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our committee met on April 8, 2010. There were two items that we discussed and took action on. The first item is a revision to the privacy policy to facilitate customers' electronic access to smart trip data. The staff sought board approval to adopt a revision of Section 9.3 of the privacy policy to allow registered smart trip card owners online access to their smart trip data, provided that they satisfy identity and ownership verification requirements that are consistent with current industry standards. I move approval.
It's been moved. Is there a second? Looking for a second. Okay, we have a second, Mr. Zimmerman. Are there any comments or questions?
Yes.
Mr. Graham.
Is there any impact on this proposed policy on the access of others to this data?
I don't understand what you mean by access to others.
Is it making it easier for anybody else to get the data?
Can anybody else get your data?
Still protect privacy.
What he's asking.
The whole point of this policy is to provide folks who want access to their data.
To their own data.
To their own data, but not necessarily access to OMATA staff or any other third-party entity.
So it's only limited to people getting access to their own data.
To their own personal data.
Thank you.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Question on that last item.
I'm sorry.
That's fine. The vote is the vote. I just want to know, this having now been approved, what is the expected implementation? When might customers actually get this ability?
This is actually on the FA committee agenda for May 13th, actually an update of all the smart trip capabilities. So we can address it then. I don't have an actual date in front of me.
Is this something coming soon?
This year, yes. This calendar year, that's correct.
So before December, you think people will be able to do this?
Yeah, there'll be some capability to do this. That's correct.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
The second item on our committee agenda was to approve an amendment to the Metro whistleblower policy. This action would revise Metro policy instruction whistleblowing 7.32, which will promote safety and enhance operations and renew Metro's commitment to encouraging good faith reports of fraud, abuse, waste, gross mismanagement, and safety and security violations, and protect employees and others who make such report from discipline and retaliation. I move this action.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. I would note this directs the general manager to return to the Policy Program Development and Intergovernmental Relations Committee and to the board within 90 days. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Comment? Mr. Downey first, and then Mr. Zimmerman.
Part of this is being done pursuant to federal law, which has been enacted. So I just want to be certain the employees actually have these rights as of now. This is a resolution that will just codify that and make it part of policy. But it is something they can now do under law.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to understand a little better exactly what this is doing. The resolve clauses, of which there are two functionally. One says that Metro shall renew its commitment to encouraging da da da. I don't know what it means, shall renew. It's as if it's something that follows this resolution as opposed to being the resolution. And the second one then directs the manager to revise policy, which presumably means a manager level administrative policy as opposed to a board policy. And I'm a little confused about what the status of this is within, you know, sort of the legal framework of the agency. Is there not to be a board level policy for whistleblower protection?
Yes, there will be. Staff will return with the policy fleshed out for the board's approval within 90 days as directed.
And that, which is referenced in the second resolve clause, that really is the substance of this resolution, that essentially this is direction, go back and bring us a new policy, and we're going to try and approve it in 3 months.
Yes.
Okay. Then my only other question is, will the process by which this is going to be considered, it's supposed to be back for approval in 90 days, does that mean we're going to see it on the 89th day, or will it be out there in some form so that, for instance, representatives of employees can look at it and provide comments on how they see it?
It is our intent to coordinate with the appropriate representatives.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I'd say is that I think that 90 days is kind of a long time, particularly if what it means is at the end of 90 days we're going to say it can't be approved now because, you know, the union hasn't seen it, and so-and-so hasn't seen it, so we have to put it off again. If there's any way this can be brought back, whatever the draft is going to be, in less time than 90 days, then that process could be begun, and perhaps we wouldn't have to wait so long before renewing our commitment to encouraging good faith reports of fraud, abuse, waste, gross mismanagement, safety and security violations, and protecting employees and others who make such reports from discipline and retaliation.
I would suggest, first of all, that we, recognizing your concern, adjust the language in the first resolve to say Metro renews and take the word shall out so that that action occurs now. And I thought I heard from Ms. O'Keefe that by the time this came back, she would have already done the coordination that I think you're suggesting. Is that right?
That is our intent, yes.
Would that be acceptable?
If coordination means review, so that there will be some kind of exposure draft or something like that, that people can review and discuss, and by people I mean not only the members of the board, but others who might be affected, you know, from the public and from employees, you know, with at least, 30 days or something, I think that would probably be adequate.
Is that acceptable?
It shall be done.
Thank you, Ms. O'Keefe.
Thank you.
Then we're ready for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. There are no noes. And does that conclude your report?
That concludes my report, Mr. Chair.
We have five administrative items. I would request that we have a motion to approve them en masse. Is it so moved? Oh, wait a minute. Ms.
Hewlett. Yes. I just have they can be improved en masse. I don't have any issue about the approval, but I have a question regarding the Northern Bus Garage.
Okay, let's get a second, and then we'll have
second.
A question. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Your question, Mr. Graham?
Yeah, are we operating? I'm pleased that this has been worked out. I'm concerned about the fact that that the employees at the Northern Bus Garage reportedly are parking to a great extent in the neighborhood. This is bothering the neighbors. I don't know what can be done to get them to go to these parking spaces, but some effort needs to be made along that line. If there's a response to that, I'm happy to hear it, but I just wanted to express the concern, but Mr. Requa has a...
Mr. Graham, I agree. We've provided the parking. We have provided parking in the past at the facility. We needed to move the employees out. We've provided the parking. We've informed them that they need to park in the garage. We can't force them to do that. We've encouraged for those that are parking on the street, that if they're illegally parking, if they're ticketed or they're towed, that's all at the employee's expense. We continue to encourage them to use the new facility, which it works well for us.
Can you at some point give us some report, say in a month or so, about how many spaces are being utilized at the DC USA garage?
We can do that.
And the second thing is, are we running a shuttle on this location?
Yes.
And I appreciate why we would have to have a shuttle at like 4 a.m., but during the day, why don't they just get on the bus on 14th Street? I mean, are they averse to riding the bus?
No, they all ride buses all day long.
Well, then why do we have a shuttle service when we have some of the best bus service in town running north and south on 14th Street?
We can take a look at that.
Why don't they just get on the bus?
We can take a look at that and see if we can cut it back.
How much is the shuttle costing us?
I believe it's in the area of $400,000 a year.
Well, need I say more?
No, I understand.
And don't they have free passage? They don't pay fare? They don't pay bus fares?
That's correct.
Well, I suggest we look at them riding the bus.
I understand.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent suggestion, Mr. Graham.
Okay, these items have been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye. Aye. I didn't hear many others. Opposed? No. I did not hear any no's. That completes all of our actions. Reports, first of all, from the District of Columbia, Mr. Albert.
No reports from the District of Columbia.
WSTC. Okay. Mr. Linton, would you like to give the report for WSTC?
No report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Linton. NVTC, Ms. Hudgens. And the federal government, Mr. Downey. No reports. Then I did want to note that we had recessed our executive session. We will return to executive session to continue the same discussions as we were having before. That being the case, this meeting is adjourned.